Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's Authoritarian Playbook series. Later in the show, we'll discuss the progressive wins in last night's election and what they mean for the future of the Democratic Party. But first, we're discussing Trump's family fortunes. Since he returned to the White House in January of last year, Trump and his family have made more than $2 billion in cash and gifts from the presidency, with this amount increasing every day. The Center for American Progress has a Trump's Take real-time financial tracker. The New York Times, Reuters, The Wall Street Journal, and other media outlets have done extensive reporting on the money that the family has made. $2.4 billion has come from Trump and his sons involvement in the crypto industry, $400 million in the form of a jet gifted to Trump by the Qatari government, $28 million was paid out to Melania Trump as part of a $40 million deal with Amazon to license her documentary, and $90 million was made through legal settlements with some of the largest tech and media companies, including YouTube, ABC, and Paramount CBS. They've also made money through real estate deals and selling a lot of things on various websites like Bibles and $500 gold golf shoes. The Trump family is bringing in nearly triple what they brought in during Trump's first year of his first term. Also, Trump Media and Technology Group is offering a subscription service for earlier access to Trump's Truth social posts for $100,000 a month. According to reports, five Wall Street firms have already signed up for that service. It'll give them access to what Trump posts on Truth Social milliseconds before those posts go to the general public. Democrats have introduced legislation to ban and investigate this plan. All of this comes as 49% of U.S. families say they cannot afford basic necessities, according to the Urban Institute. Joining us today are two reporters. Russ Buettner is an investigative reporter with the New York Times. Since 2016, he's focused on the personal finances of Trump, including articles that revealed how two decades of his tax returns showed large business losses and tax avoidance schemes. In 2019, Russ Buettner shared a Pulitzer Prize for reporting that revealed the massive inheritance Trump received from his father. Russ Buettner is co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, Lucky Loser, How Donald Trump Squandered His Father's Fortune and Created the Illusion of Success. Hi, Russ. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Rose.
Great to have you. Tom Bergen is an investigative journalist for Reuters, where he writes about regulatory abuses, fraud, tax avoidance, and illicit money flows. Tom Bergen has reported on Trump's businesses for 20 years, conducting forensic examinations of his finances. Tom's work has prompted parliamentary inquiries, and he's won a number of awards. He's the author of two books, Spills and Spin, The Inside Story of BP, and Free Lunch Thinking, Eight Economic Myths and Why Politicians Fall for Them. Hi, Tom. Thank you for your work, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, it's lovely to be here.
Well, it's great to have both of you. I want to give out the phone number. If you have any questions about the money that the Trump family is making off of the presidency, Russ and Tom are the guys to ask because they have been doing this work for many, many years. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Before we dive in and talk about specifics, I want to ask you both some large general questions. So many people say that what we are seeing from Trump's second term is unprecedented. We have never seen this kind of deal-making and money-making. So, Russ, let's start with you. What strikes you in the interviews that you've done and what you're hearing about how unprecedented this is?
Mostly the unprecedented is not a sufficient word to describe what we're seeing. I mean, if you compare this to the complaints that Trump and his sons made about Hunter Biden for a number of years, that he had sold some paintings for a few thousand dollars, that he had collected, I don't know, $50,000 or something for being on the board of an oil company that when he had no actual expertise in that topic, they're doing something. It's like they hated that so much that they decided to do it at a greater scale than that. And the Bidens admitted that that was not appropriate. But Trump's position is that they're sort of entitled to this because they've had a long career in business. But really looking at these things, they're not actual businesses that the Trumps are running. They didn't invest anything that we can tell. They have very little or no operational responsibilities for it. And when these coins are sold, it's not going to fund the business. And the people who are buying the coins are not investing in the business. The money just goes right out the back door to the Trumps and their family. And that's $1.4 billion over the course of 12 months. There's just nothing, even a tenth of that, in our nation's history.
Wow. Tom, what would you add?
I mean, just on an international perspective, it's also very difficult to come up with anything that's comparable. I mean, we've seen plenty of billionaires who've become world leaders. I mean, Berlusconi, Babish in Czech Republic. But what we're seeing here is that someone has actually created a new billion-dollar fortune out of an area that they had no previous involvement with. And we're seeing this across all the business areas. As Russ is saying there, you know, that there wasn't a huge demand for the Trump sons to sit on listed companies' boards. So it's not that they're doing something that they had previously been doing at a greater scale. I mean, we are seeing this. You know, it is tremendously unusual to see such a strong increase in the revenues at a golf course and these private clubs that the Trumps run, and the revenue increases seem to kind of track the political fortunes of the family. We see that, but what we're seeing with the crypto activities, that's an entirely different separate activity. As I say, it's a new business, and really outside, you know, developing countries, we just haven't seen world leaders come into power and suddenly build up these enormous fortunes out of nowhere.
How do you both think we should be thinking about this? Because we often hear words like corruption, pay to play. People are asking, is this even legal? Russ, your colleague, Jonathan Swan, is doing a lot of interviews about his new book. And he made a point in a number of these interviews saying that it's important to remember that Trump was granted sweeping immunity with the Supreme Court's ruling in 2024. Trump is beyond the reach of the law in terms of actions, and it hasn't really been tested, so we don't know what the boundaries of this are. So given that, Russ, how should we be thinking about all of this?
There's numerous levels on which this is very problematic. An interesting thing that Donald Trump said to some of my colleagues at the paper earlier this year is that he noticed in his first term that he had avoided doing international deals. He felt like he didn't get any credit for that, and he turned away a lot of money, and he found out that no one cares if he does it. So he is taking so much of this money from overseas sources. But the big thing that we don't know is some number of people have given the President of the United States $1.4 billion basically in cash, and we really don't know who they are. So that makes it very difficult to think of how to think about this. Some of it's foreign governments. It's the royal family of UAE gave him $500 million in secret to buy half of his brand new crypto company. That doesn't seem to make a lot of business sense for them. But what did they want for that? And how should we view any interactions that President Trump has with that government in that whole region? And who are the other people that are behind this billion-dollar windfall that he got? And how is it affecting his judgment and his outcome and his decisions on foreign policy, on national policy? He's got Binance, which is a huge crypto company that's been pled guilty a few years ago to money laundering, is sitting on $4.7 billion in his stablecoin. Every month, that generates tens of millions of dollars of interest for the Trump family every single month. They could redeem that at any point in time. They could send it somewhere else, but they're just sitting on it. That doesn't seem to make great sense for Binance. What interest do they have in continuing to prop up the Trump family's finances? So I don't think we know enough to know how to think about it, other than it's immensely problematic for every decision he makes in any sort of level.
Why is it so hard to determine where that $1.4 billion in cash came from?
Tom's an excellent reporter. Tom, why don't you talk about that?
The nature of crypto is we can't see externally where that's coming from. Now, the Trumps can clearly see where that's coming from, particularly, you know, people are, when they buy directly from or Liberty Financial, which is the main crypto vehicle that they use. They can see, we can't see from the outside. Now, we've done a lot of reporting, as other outlets have done. We've spoken to a lot of investors, big and small, in that, and there are people, you may have different motives. We've spoken to a lot of people who, it was just purely a financial reason. Interestingly, what I would say is that we came across very few people who purely invested out of a desire to show loyalty to the president. We found plenty of Trump supporters who bought these tokens, but generally they expected and hoped to make money out of this. And of course, that they've all failed in that regard. But it is very difficult to know who they are, and I don't think we'll ever get a true accounting of that. And then, as soon as the way much of these coins then were distributed, there's a lot of secrecy. So one of the things that we discovered was it was really buried in a filing for European regulators, that they revealed that they had dissipated $3 billion of these tokens they hadn't disclosed. Now, as it happens, the current regulations that are being discussed in the United States are that issuers of coins would be required to make those kinds of disclosures. They're not, they're failing in even that standard. So, we don't know. I don't think we'll ever know exactly where this comes from. And then that means we don't exactly know what their motives were.
You know, Tom, I'm guessing that a lot of people don't really understand how people are getting so rich off of crypto. I'm guessing a lot of people might not really care, but in many ways we have to care because it's so huge right now. I mean, we can do a whole show on crypto, but for those of us who don't get this, can you explain how is it that $2.4 billion has come from Trump and his son's involvement in the crypto industry?
Sure. I mean, the first thing to understand, I mean, I've covered business for, as part of, or covered business or worked in business for 30 years. And the first thing to understand about crypto, the purchase and sale of crypto tokens, is really much more akin to gambling than to any kind of stock securities trading. These are not businesses in the normal way. You make money by transferring it from someone else. You sell them a coin, and that person buys it in the hope that they can sell it to somebody else for a higher price. There is no money being generated here. These are not like Google shares. They're not like SpaceX shares, even if you think they're too high or too low. It's simply moving from one place to another. So when the Trumps sell a crypto token, they make money. The person who buys it, they may sell it, if they're lucky, to someone else for a bit more. But what has been shown through studies of literally hundreds of thousands of coins which have been minted and sold is that almost all of them go to zero. We all know about Bitcoin, Dogecoin, etc. But the truth is that mostly these coins fail. And what we're seeing, what we've seen with the Trump meme coin, and we have seen with the World Liberty Financial Coin, is the exact same pattern. So it's not really a surprise that that's happened. And it's basically been a transfer of wealth from the purchasers to the Trump family and to their associates.
Thank you for that explanation. Russ, what would you like to add about crypto? Because this is kind of head spinning for people who just are new to this world and don't really understand how people are making so much money off of crypto, which, as Tom said, is basically like gambling.
Yeah, I think Tom did an excellent job of explaining that. It's a lot of people are not making a lot of money off of this. What's happening is that the people who are selling these coins bring in a lot of money initially, especially in the case of the Trumps here. So they sell these coins, they bring in a few more than $1 billion in revenue. And then the people who have bought those coins, as Tom said, are hoping it's going to go up, but it hasn't gone up. So most of the people who have bought their World Liberty tokens have lost money. The people who bought what's called a meme coin have lost money. It's really, as Tom was getting at, I think of it as in an old school way of sort of like buying a baseball trading card, right? You're not investing in the bubblegum company that made the card. You don't have any, you can't take it to a bank and cash it back in for what you bought it for or more. You're just, again, sitting there seeing to wait if somebody else is going to want to pay more. Most of them don't have any real utility yet. So that's what you're relying on. There is one branch of it. And again, this is a world that's changing all the time. But there's a branch of it called the stable coin, in which the token is matched in value to the US dollar. And it has to be backed up by money that's held in very safe investments, typically federal treasury bonds. So those have some kind of utility because I can pay you $100 and you know when you get it, it's worth $100. And most of these tokens, if I pay you $100 and it's worth of that token in any given moment, it might be worth more or a lot less by the next day. So they haven't found widespread utility in commerce. But it's a changing environment in which overall, as Tom got to, the people who are selling the coins are the ones who are making a lot of money, and a lot of other people are losing a lot of money, except in a couple of cases.
Right. It's Tom, you and your colleagues back in June wrote a really long piece, Under the Trump Crypto Playbook, The Family Always Wins, Investors Don't. You all write, still, all but three of the 27 individual investors interviewed for this piece said they knew of Trump's history of bankruptcies, unpaid contractors, and failed ventures. Still, most said they believed that his position at the apex of American political power and what they perceived as his business acumen ensured lucrative returns on their investments. Many acknowledged doing little or no due diligence. Some said they still hold on to the hope that Trump will make things right. Others expressed regret, anger, and embarrassment. They range from a Minnesota software engineer who said he lost $60,000 of his savings, to a hotel manager in Vietnam who lost years' worth of his income. They include the owner of an import-export business in Texas, a hospitality exec in D.C., and a retiree from New York. So people are losing a lot of money because of these investments. Tom, based on the reporting you've done, as you report, some say that they still hold hope that Trump's going to make things right. Are people also turning on him, realizing that he might be in this for himself?
We're seeing, you know, we have seen some of that. Ironically, we've also seen people who are Trump supporters buying these products and then and then, you know, blaming the Democrats and saying, you know, that the Democrats are naked, short selling and things like that. Obviously, you know, if you look at Trump media, which is another one, it sort of sits outside this, but in that same space somewhat, you know, there's lots of shorting of that. True. Of course, that's because it's a heavily loss-making company, I would argue. I mean, that's generally the kind of companies that get shorted. But in terms of the shorting of coins and tokens, this is not that common. The market doesn't function so much like that. So, you know, people are confused. They're unhappy. It's possible people may listen to some of those stories and not feel a lot of sympathy for those people. But I think that, you know, I mean, I've covered, you know, regulatory issues in the past and looking at people who are, you know, the victims of maybe markets haven't been policed correctly. And, you know, it doesn't matter really, you know, what all the time, what the motivation of the person is, or their analysis of the situation. The reality is that people at the core of it thought they were buying an investment. Now, these things are, you know, big hullabaloo saying, oh, it's not an investment, it's plastered all over it. But under the previous administration, and as it has been for many years, the SEC doesn't really look very hard at you know, that sort of denial. And that's it, they deny it's an investment to get around regulatory restrictions. But you know, people bought these, they thought they were an investment, they were trying to take care of their, you know, their future and make some money for themselves and their family. It didn't go right, and obviously they're living with the consequences of that. And we've come across people who have lost, you know, material amounts of money in, you know, retirement funds. And they are doing things, clearly they're not consistent with the best advice that would be given by financial advisors. But unfortunately, they are looking at quite simply, you know, the president is the president. We don't expect to be hoodwinked by the president.
Wow. Tom Bergen is an investigative journalist for Reuters. He has reported on Trump's businesses for 20 years. He's the author of two books, including Free Lunch Thinking, Eight Economic Myths and Why Politicians Fall for Them. Russ Buettner is an investigative reporter for the New York Times. Since 2016, he's focused on the personal finances of Trump. In 2019, he shared a Pulitzer Prize for reporting that revealed the massive inheritance Trump received from his father. He's co-author of the best-selling book, Lucky Loser, How Donald Trump Squandered His Father's Fortune and Created the Illusion of Success. On today's Your Call, it's our Authoritarian Playbook series, and we are talking about the money that Trump and his family is making off of their second time in the White House. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have a couple of emails from listeners who say, what can be done about this? Let's just wait on that one for a couple of minutes and talk a bit more about your findings. Russ, can you talk about what it takes to reveal this information, and what has changed from the first time Trump is in the White House versus the second time, given that the people that work in his cabinet, for the most part, this time around are very tight-lipped. Most of them are yes, men and women. They're not disagreeing with him. They're not really speaking out. So given that, what does it take to reveal this kind of information?
Well, the one thing we have in our favor, really the only reason we know these numbers, is because there's a requirement for the president and other federal officials to file annual disclosures revealing how much they've earned over the prior year. And that's where these figures come from. Donald Trump just released the first one. To reveal the underlying information of it, you really need subpoena power. There are some of these token buyers who have self-identified. They've said on Twitter, this is me, or there are companies that have done that. And there are a few entities that some of the intelligence analytical firms in the crypto space have been able to identify. But for the most part, if you wish to stay anonymous, you're just your wallet ID is just a long string of numbers on something called the blockchain. And so to get past that, you really need subpoena power to go into the exchanges and say, we need to know who's behind this number and try to figure that out. That's a steep hill to climb. And right now, it's impossible, I think, to imagine Donald Trump's Department of Justice pursuing these sorts of things. I think what's changed for him financially, yes, last time there were people who in his cabinet who were opposing him and sort of serving as brakes on his impulses. And this time there is no one that we can tell who is serving that purpose. And in terms of the business, look, when he entered office, one of the things we get into in the book and in his tax return showed is that for the prior few years as The Apprentice, the show that he starred on for years, declined in popularity. His income dropped precipitously. His licensing deals and endorsement deals, which had really fueled a lot of his earlier this century income, just disappeared as that show became less popular. His money from the show obviously dwindled as its ratings went down. And then when he was in office the second time, there were also not many, they didn't do any overseas licensing deals. They said they wouldn't, but there were no licensing deals in the United States had started either. That business had effectively died. They said we gave up a bunch of money by doing that. But when he left office, again, there were not any new licensing deals for a number of years until he won the Republican nomination. And suddenly his name had value again, or people in other countries were looking to pay him, to hoping to curry his favor, and overseas licensing deals upticked greatly. And then as he's about to enter office in mid-2024, the family that has no background in cryptocurrencies, that had disparaged it for years, suddenly opened up these entities, which are really just money collecting facilities the way they're running them. And that's the biggest change in terms of his finances, that they've just put up this billboard with Donald Trump's on the internet, Donald Trump's image on it, saying it's founded in his honor and spirit. And it says at the bottom, if you buy this, he gets 75% of it. If you buy that, he gets 38% of it. If that's not a billboard for hopeful bribes, I don't know what is.
Wow. You know, and there's just so much going on. I just want to read a couple of recent New York Times headlines. Trump is pushing nuclear energy. His family and supporters could benefit. Donald Trump Jr.'s investment firm posts staggering returns of 200%. Inside the deal to drop Trump's $10 billion suit against the IRS, Trump's tangled web of deal-making, policy, and riches. And then, Tom, your pieces, so many crypto headlines here. Trump invested crypto gains in stock and bonds, praising or parsing the Trump's crypto profits. Trump's ethics filings reveal thousands of trades tied to U.S. corporate securities. There's just so much here inside the Trump family's global crypto cash machine. Are you still based in London, Tom?
Yes, I am. Yes, so I covered. Yes, so I'm based here, and but I work with a U.S. team who combined we follow the family's finances.
And I wonder what it's like for you during the second term, and what is it like reporting from the outside of the United States on these issues?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I suppose in one sense, you know, having a bit of distance, it can be nice in some ways that you can sit back from some of the vitriol and take a, you know, purely numerical look at some of these things. I perhaps can afford to be a bit more objective in some ways, because I can look at it as an outsider. I mean, I live in the UK, I'm Irish, I can also be a bit more of an outsider here on politics. Mm-hmm. But it as I said, you know, you can't help but compare this to other things. But also, of course, it allows you to see a lot of what is happening in the context of what's happening elsewhere. So, for example, you know, the fortune has been facilitated by the change in the regulatory situation. When President Trump came in, he became the crypto president. Fundamental change in regulation. It's really impossible to see how World Liberty Financial or the meme coin could have functioned in the same way they did that they have now under the Biden regime. And so that this change in regulation has happened, has facilitated the profit making. But that change in regulations has other potential risks and downsides that may unfold. And, you know, looking at it from a distance, what I can see is that the United States has suddenly become an outlier. I mean, if you go onto the Singapore government website, you'll see warnings that say that crypto products are not suitable investments for retail investors. And, you know, any crypto company that's operating in the United Kingdom, their website is plastered with various warnings. The regulatory approach and the sort of the messaging that is coming out of regulators in the United States now is one of, you know, at best caveat emptor. So the changes that have happened that have facilitated that money making faces risk, and we see this around other policy issues as well. But that's something I think from an outside perspective you can see that, and I'm always going to be looking at things as to how they compare in other jurisdictions.
Tom Bergen is investigative journalist with Reuters. Russ Buettner is an investigative reporter with the New York Times. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the money that the Trump family is making in their second term. We're also getting a few emails about this program, this service that they're offering people to get early access to Truth Social posts. So this is pretty wild to think about. Trump often goes on Truth Social to make major announcements. He doesn't talk to the press about it. He will go on Truth Social and make a major announcement. And so the Trump Media and Technology Group is releasing a new subscription service for early access to these posts for $100,000 a month. And according to reports, five Wall Street firms have already signed up for this service. And so they are going to receive these posts milliseconds before the general public. The Democrats have introduced legislation to stop and investigate this. Russ, this is, do you think that this will go forward? Will this happen?
We are living in a house of mirrors right now in terms of the conflict of interest that Donald Trump creates every month here. I don't know that we can tell who will be able to stop it. I don't know without the cooperation of Republicans in Congress, there's any chance that it will be stopped. But it is a phenomenal thing. And what, look, the Wall Street firms only need a millisecond to get a jump. And that's basically insider trading when you're getting information that's not public. But when the president of the United States is going to sell that, how could a Wall Street firm that can afford it not buy that? Because it does give you the ability to trade on information before it comes public. Just look at the stuff he says on a regular basis about the war in Iran. Every pronouncement moves the markets generally for oil futures and other a whole host of products that are affected by those decisions. And so to have just a little bit of a jump on that is a million-dollar advantage that multi-million-dollar advantage that you, if you can afford to buy that, you're going to have to. So really, you're just down to the president being willing to sell it. And I think that's what we get to over and over with Donald Trump, is that we're really being faced with how much of our there are just no real laws that control the president's conflict of interest for his personal finances. That's all based on norms of the office and what people who have occupied it previously were willing or not willing to take. And Donald Trump has just taken down all those guardrails, and he's using that history of norms rather than laws to his great advantage.
Just to give a couple examples of how this is happening, and this is according to the Wall Street Journal. On June 9th, Trump posted that Iran shot down an Apache helicopter that was patrolling the Strait of Hormuz, saying the United States must of necessity respond to this attack. Trading and energy stocks spiked almost immediately. 2 days later, Trump said in a post he was canceling strikes scheduled for that evening because negotiations were proceeding. Trump wrote, time and place of the signing to be announced shortly. This time, according to the Wall Street Journal, the instant reaction triggered a steep fall in energy and military-related share prices. Tom, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, is something like this even legal?
So Reuters has been doing this business for 175 years. For 175 years, we have been providing market-making information to financial firms. He started doing it with pigeons back in Aachen about 175 years ago. And the our biggest scoop involved this kind of issue. It's when we broke the news in the United Kingdom about the death of Abraham Lincoln, which was it brought into a wonderful movie that featured Edward G. Robinson. But the point is, this is incredibly problematic business. You have to be pursuing that. If you're providing market making information to financial players, you have to operate within incredibly strict rules. And what this would mean is that companies are typically not allowed to provide it to Reuters before they provide it to the broader market. If GM is putting out its earnings, it doesn't give them to Reuters before it gives them to Bloomberg or the AP or anybody else. The regulators would never have allowed that. So this is not a strange area. We know how this game works. It's just that this particular match is being played in a way that doesn't seem to reflect those rules. So it will be interesting to see what happens. But what I would say is that if we were to sign a deal like that with GM, I'm not sure that the, I just very difficult to see that the SEC would allow that. And I've literally been involved in stories here in the UK. One particular one that comes to mind, for the the precursor to the current FCA, financial regulator, complained about it because we had a scoop. So it's pretty just, I'm mind blown, to be honest.
Well, that movie that you mentioned sounds so interesting. I looked this up if anyone's interested. It came out in 1940 and it's called A Dispatch from Reuters. Starting with a small flock of carrier pigeons, 19th century entrepreneur Julius Reuter turns his small company into Europe's most respected newswire service. Thank you for mentioning that. In our final minutes, we're getting a lot of emails and a few calls about what can be done about this. Art writes in, can Trump's profiteering while president appear in articles of impeachment by the House? Couldn't he and his family be forced to give back the money scammed from U.S. citizens after he leaves office? This raises a really important question, actually, Russ. Do we know how much of this money that they are making actually is coming from taxpayers or is connected to taxpayer money?
I don't think we know, and I'd be interested in your Tom's thoughts on this also. I don't think we know what percentage of this money is coming from citizens of the United States compared to citizens of other countries. So that's the first part of that. I think it's the question about impeachment is a good one. That's really, there's no real clear definition of impeachment. High crimes and misdemeanors is not a very clear threshold. So it tends to be however Congress chooses to define that at any point in time. That's not happening right now with both houses of Congress in control of the Republican Party and still obedient to Donald Trump. That maybe would not have been the case 40 or 50 years ago, but right now he very much has a tight control on the party. Whether it could happen next year during his last years in office, that's an open question. And that would depend again on the dynamic of Congress and how they perceive his waning power as he enters sort of a lame duck phase.
Tom, your final thoughts on that?
No, as Russ said, and it said earlier, the we don't know. The blockchain doesn't tell us who bought, so we can't know. I mean, we do know from various different, signatures as such that and indeed in some interviews we've done that there's a significant Asian presence. Also, the very fact that World Liberty Financial executives spend so much time traveling to Asia and speaking at conferences there makes it very clear they're speaking to an Asian audience. So a lot of money coming from there, and there is definitely a lot of money coming from the United States. And I think the other issue is, we didn't discuss it, was the listed companies. So they were direct sales of crypto, but then the Trumps also got involved in two listed companies, one of them which became a so-called treasury company buying the tokens. So some people weren't interested in buying crypto, and the Trumps thought about, well, how could we reach those people and reach their wallets, I guess? And they came up with a equity wrapper for that, effectively. They helped, reinvent this already listed company that would go out and buy $700 million worth of their tokens. And so that, and we can see from the shareholding register, because those are disclosed, dozens and dozens of US investment firms. And they go from the very largest, like Vanguard, all the way down to private investment managers from regional centers who market their services to families. And all of those shares have significantly dropped, sort of 90% drop in value. So yeah, we know that a lot of Americans have been very severely burned by these operations.
Right. Well, I want to thank both of you for your important reporting on this. Tom Bergen is an investigative journalist for Reuters. He's reported on Trump's businesses for 20 years. Russ Buettner is an investigative reporter with the New York Times. Since 2016, he has focused on the personal finances of Trump. And in 2019, he shared a Pulitzer for reporting that revealed the massive inheritance Trump received from his father. Tom and Russ, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you very much, Rose.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will talk about last night's election. Progressives scored key victories in primaries across the country. We'll also talk about what this means for the future of the Democratic Party. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this.